I'm Karen, I'm an addict and I'm kind of overwhelmed. I can't believe I was asked to be part of this thing, particularly since we're shy on women. You know, why in God's name would you pick me and not some of the others is beyond me. I do not have an impressive service history. The way my I guess you use the term predecessors. It sounds so ritualistic. Oh, my predecessor. But the people came before me, such a weird term. You know, as soon as you put somebody on a pedestal, they have a long way to fall. And I don't buy any of the hierarchy around here. I just don't, because it's just not true. And if I bought into hierarchy, I'd be in deep trouble, because I'm old and I've been clean a long time, and I better not be something, some great high mucky muck, because you're going to be gravely disappointed when you get to know me. And I'm going to need your help, and I'm going to need your input and your wisdom as God reveals it to you. So I'm just Karen from Santa Cruz, and I live in the mountains, and I got clean in North Hollywood, and I look at some of these dear faces, and yeah, it gets a little hard to look at you guys. I can't tell you how many times I wish I was standing in your presence and just got to be around you, because there's nobody as dear to me as people that helped me get clean or that I got clean with. I saw Kathy M. every single night in meetings. I'll never forget some of her stories and some of her struggles. And I saw Tony looking slick on his motorcycle, and here we are, you know, and we're old. I want to be very conscious of the people in other parts of the world right now, because you're listening to this, maybe looking for a lifeline of some sort. Maybe you're new. And I just want to tell you, maybe we're talking about things you don't understand. We're talking about history and structure and who's the founder and East Coast, West Coast. And honestly, nothing that matters at this point. What you need to know is that we are people just like you, no better, no worse. And we were in a hopeless state of mind and body, and we had no idea how to live our life. We had no idea, and we did not know how to be awake and be clean. Furthermore, we didn't want to be awake and be clean. And we kept seeing that our lives were completely unmanageable. And it's not like, some of us didn't even think drugs were the issue. We just thought life was not very complicit with our plans. Life was not very obedient. And why do we keep having such bad luck? And honestly, we ended up finding each other because of the grace of a power that I don't understand. And we were put in a place where we could support each other with some very, very old principles that were given to us. And you'll see people or hear people in the media talk with a sneer on their face about 12 steps and 12-step program. And it's the punchline to many jokes in the media. But honestly, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous are ancient spiritual principles that have been used in one form or another since people discovered that they had a soul. And we've discovered that we need these basic spiritual principles, and we need each other, because that's what Narcotics Anonymous has to offer, is that one addict helping another is without parallel. You can't do this successfully for a lifetime without your fellowship. And this fellowship in its construct is perfect. There's no need for this construct to change in any way, because it works. If you look at the 63,000 groups around the world, and boy, I had no idea Earth had so many continents, Tony. Thank you for that education. If you're somewhere in this world and you're in another country and you hear us talking about East Coast and West Coast and America, and we're very ethnocentric over here, and I realize you're doing the work in South Africa, the beautiful work where people don't have the money, the luxury to serve a cup of coffee at a meeting. Maybe you're all gathering at the shore somewhere in South Africa, or maybe there's somebody in Nepal and you were excited to have a meal today. And I want to tell you that you are the vision of hope. You are the vision of hope. I don't know, I'm really emotional, because I'm proud of us, because I remember the very beginning for me, and I was not, like, I didn't start, the only thing I ever predecessed is I think I was the first convention comedian, you know. Other than that, now I learned today there was a comedian at a Narcotics Anonymous convention on the East Coast, and you learn things every day. And that's a whole other point is, you know, where did NA start? Who gets the credit? How old is everybody else? Wow, that is so none of my business. Who am I to proudly talk about what a higher power starts wherever he, she, it starts it? You know, I'm just so lucky that I got to tag along. I can't even tell you. And, I don't have a delineation between me and New York. I love New York. Yeah, it's over here. I'll never be a weatherman. Anyway, I love New York. East Coast, NA. My heart goes out to you right now. You're going through some horrific times, and you're in my heart and on my mind so much. I'm very impressed with the fact that all of the history buffs in here have not talked too much about the fact that we are in a pandemic right now. We're in a crisis, a global crisis such as we have never seen. And I call it the masterclass in recovery, because never before in history have we been confronted with a situation that potentially is lethal. And we're asked to obey, and we've got to step up and support each other. We don't have the luxury of thinking about whether or not we're going to show up like never before, like we were taught in the old days. You don't wonder if you're going to go to a meeting tonight. You're at a meeting tonight. You got to do the five things like you've never done the five things. When we got clean, we were taught you go to a meeting every day, some kind of meeting, right? And it wasn't until I had a couple of years that I had the luxury of going to an NA meeting during the day and during the night. It's exactly like Tony said. It's like, who has the car with the gas in it? And how can we pool our money and we'll get enough gas and we'll go the 30 miles to where the NA meeting is that night? You know, it's the way it was. We had my service was different. I went to a couple of those big business meetings and my name is on a few of the rosters, but I really had no idea what anybody was talking about. The NA tree was the most confusing thing I ever saw in my life, and I just acted like I got it. I had no idea what I was talking about. I got railroaded into being a GSR when I had 4 months clean, and basically that's what some of us are. You know, some of us talkative, attention-seeking people are the ones that tend to get railroaded into things. People will be like, yeah, you're on fire. Go do the stuff we don't want to do. And then you railroad people who do not have the experience into service. And then you get surprised why service bodies make wacky decisions. Just saying. So I was new. And Narcotics Anonymous was new, and there was a man who has since passed. His name was Jose Torres, and he used to say to me, he'd run into me, like, I got to tell you, the first 12-step meeting of any kind I ever went to was the last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that Jimmy Kinnon ever chaired. Talk about a coincidence. And he was sitting at the head of the table, and I was sitting in this club, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing there. I had called some kind of hotline, and I asked somebody where a meeting was, and they tried to be kind, and I told them to go F themselves, and I hung up on them. And then I made it to this place, and there were all these people sitting there, and they had tattoos on the inside of their arms, and Jews don't usually get tattoos by choice. They're usually stuck on them, and we're screaming when it happens. So I don't know what I'm doing at this table, and there are people and cultures I've never heard of, and I had this terrible sinking pit in my stomach that, oh my God, once again, I found myself in a place I don't belong. I never felt like I belonged in my life. It wasn't fashionable to talk about childhoods when I got clean, and I came from a very private hell in the way that I grew up. My mother had been a prisoner in Auschwitz. And my father suffered from a debilitating mental illness. And I showed up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I was not a badass like some of the women were. I did not have the look. I did not have the game. I did not have the history. the only prostitution I had ever done was for some of the basics, and it wasn't necessarily for money. It was for things like a coat and breakfast, you know? So I was the oddball at the time, but there was one story in this little white pamphlet. Oh gosh, I don't know where I put it, but I had a little white book here. And there was a story in there about a woman who did not have the typical story. You know, she was the housewife with pills. Oh, here's a replica. Imagine getting clean and trying to find yourself in this. So there was a story in there, though, which has been removed, but it was about a woman with an atypical story. And even though I can still doubt to this very day that this is what I am doing and what I belong to, this little thing gave me a shred of hope. And recovery houses were just starting back then, and they wouldn't let you leave the recovery house without one of these in your back pocket. It was supposed to be some kind of insurance. And I was too afraid to check into a house. And so I made my own recovery house. I made sure that I was in as many meetings as I could be. I had a sponsor who told me to eat 3 meals, which was a spiritual revelation. And I found myself eating. And I was introduced to steps. And it was very basic for me in the beginning. And when I found Narcotics Anonymous, actually, this sponsor was from the other program, and she brought me to NA, and she said, oh, I think you'll find yourself here. And she brought me in there, and I met people like Kathy M. I met Bob B's former wife, Alma, who was not an addict, but who came to women's meetings to make sure there were enough bodies in the room. And we owe a debt of gratitude to Alma Barrett. And there was a feeling that women didn't get clean back then, that we were just a bunch of hoes. We were just in there for the men. And I got to tell you, the pickings were slim, so I don't know how true that was. But anyway, sorry, guys. Love you very much. Glad you got teeth and jobs. Good. So, that, you know, we were only here for attention. We were only here for guys. We were only here for money. Actually, recently, a few years ago, 8 years ago, traveled to Barbados, where I was told that women are not really addicts. They just need to stay at home. And so we just keep them at home. They don't belong in meetings. I hear that's not true anymore in Barbados, and that's pretty awesome, because I'm sure that was quite a battle to get out of your house. Anyway, so I was 21 years old when I got clean. This is really a young person's story. And I'm not like a founder of anything. I am the product of founders. The kinds of people that I sat and listened to at Oz. I sat in meetings with Jimmy. I went to his house. I was friends with Betty. I sat at the Survivors Club. It was my job a couple days a week to keep the doors open. So I sat in there keeping the doors open. The first place that we called ourselves the first NA clubhouse. How's that for a tradition violation? But we had plenty of meetings in there, and that was pretty exciting. And we had a stabbing and we had a shooting, but everybody survived. So Survivors Club. What do I want to say about that time? We had no idea how holy it was. We had no idea that when you're sitting in there in the morning meeting and you hear Jimmy's truck rumble into the driveway and you hear his voice and you see him walking in there with Greg Pierce, and they got this big crate in their arms and it's full of geodes, and they'd been out to the desert in the morning because probably Tony remembers that Greg and Jimmy had this thing about geodes, and they liked to use the rock to open up the geodes. They had like a rock polisher. I think that was Greg's thing. And I could never figure out what that has to do with anything. And then Jimmy explained to me that he wouldn't tell me directly, but he would say, look at this thing. It's rough and it's crude. But there is something on the inside. We just don't know what it is, but there is one who knows what's on the inside. And if the day ever comes where you want to use, that would be the day to open this up and look and see what's on the inside. So I got a rock, you know, and I had it forever. And I thought, okay, the day I want to use, I got to open it up and I got to look on the inside. And then I realized, the only one around with a rock cutter, Jimmy and Greg, I'm never going to get loaded. They won't let me if I go to open up my rock. And now we look at geodes and we know that they're full of crystals and miracles and all kinds of different colors. And dang it, if that isn't what happened to the program. It's exactly what happened. I remember standing on Jimmy's little porch and his little, I think it was beige, little rotary telephone rang and he picked it up and he was all excited. And I was like, God, how could anybody be excited about service? Ugh. And he was so stoked because it was Chicago calling. He couldn't believe Chicago was calling and wanted literature. And I was like, yeah, wow, that's really cool. Because I had really important things to tell Jimmy and Pepe and Bob, you know. I had some pretty big, important, dramatic stories, but they were busy. They were busy doing this thing, you know. And I am going to say something that might be a little controversial. I was never once hit on or approached inappropriately when I was a newcomer. And you know what? After a while, I got cute. And I was treated well. And that for me, has made a lasting impression. And it was really important to me as I stayed clean, is that I remember being respected. Maybe not everybody was, but I was respected. And I think I was privy to be part of some of the firsts. I became a comedian when I had a couple years clean. And it was scary, and people told me it was not safe for me to do this, to go into nightclubs and things. But I thought, you know, just like my early 20s, why would I get clean if I couldn't follow my heart's content, my dreams, my passions, me, 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 me. So I started working my job during the day. I had some job in recovery. And then at night, I started going to these clubs. And maybe it wasn't safe, but I learned that if I followed the passions of my heart, two things happened. One, I got to see my recovery bloom and carry me safely through some of these scary places, and I got to have a life. And the other thing that happened was recovery followed me into some of these places, and people in these nightclubs and in these comedy condos around the nation started getting clean by osmosis. They saw me wake up. They saw me go to meetings. I got to start some meetings in some of these comedy clubs, and it was really great to see people get clean. History. So I remember a time when recovery was all about North Hollywood, and then it became about San Fernando Valley and East LA, and that, if you know anything about the culture, is quite a paradox. And then I remember Bob Barrett deciding to be part of and aggressively carry the message into South Central Los Angeles. I had the privilege of writing his eulogy and delivering it at his funeral. I have no idea why. Probably shouldn't have been a white chick, but that's what happened. And it was probably one of the biggest honors of my life. Anyway, so a remarkable thing started happening historically by my eyes, and that was the fences started coming down between people. And remember, this is only 1976, 77, 78, not that far removed from the explosion of the civil rights movement. And the fact that convicts from, you know, Pasadena, LA, whatever, white people, Bob would drive up from South Central LA and load his car full of knuckleheads and drive everybody down to House of Uhuru, and we would have a meeting. And I think it was really quite a miraculous time, and I never really appreciated what an amazing time it was, what an honor it was to watch the gates, the walls, the fences come down, to be able to have a Thanksgiving dinner with a member of an outlaw motorcycle gang who has swastikas all over his arm, and have Thanksgiving dinner with my mother with her number tattooed on her arm, and for all of us to be together and for the walls to come down. It's a remarkable gift in my lifetime. And really, if there's anything that I really want to say, you know, before I move on to some other stuff, is I want to say that for me, not being able to be awake and not be high, being so gravely disappointed at life by the age of 21 that I just had not, you know, I had had some unsuccessful attempts at taking my life, and I just couldn't determine what the final attempt was going to be. To go from someone so self-centered and self-seeking, so concerned with what I was going to get out of this, because I got to tell you honestly, I would say a good 20 years of my recovery, it was all about what am I going to get out of this? When am I going to do enough of this so I earn what I really want? The attention, the money, the physical things, the acclaim, the, you know, I kept thinking, God, Karen, if you're just good enough, if you just do enough of this stuff, if you do the works, eventually you're going to be rewarded with this thing that your heart has desired since you were a little girl. And I'm safe to say that that happened, but it did not happen in the way that I demanded that it would happen. It happened because very, very slowly, after an abundance of time, service to others has become much more important than being self-serving. And there's nothing particularly strange about me. It's just that there is nothing as beautiful and as important and as wonderful in my life as figuring out what I could do for you. And, you know, some other programs may jump all over me and say, bark, that's codependent. But I know it feels good, and believe me, I'm after feeling good. I've always been after feeling good. I always wanted to be one of those people, like I would look at people who had all these sponsees, and I would think, why don't I have all these sponsees? I want a gaggle of sponsees to travel around from convention to convention, where, you know, all that stuff. And my God, today I have the most wonderful sponsees. You know, you hear that line all the time. If you don't have the greatest sponsor in the world, you got the wrong sponsor. And I'll tell you right now, if you don't have the greatest sponsees in the world, get on it. Because I have, oh my God, I have family. I have wonderful family. Coast to coast. So we went from this little pamphlet here. And then I remembered the first book study I went to. And this is not my original one, because I had no idea it would matter. I thought, you got to give it away to keep it. And I gave all my stuff away. But anyway, so we get this book, right? And I remember the first book study, and it was exactly like somebody else said. It was like, oh boy, we're real now. We finally got our own literature. We got some real literature going on right here. And we're sort of sitting around this table somewhere in the San Fernando Valley. And we've got this book and we're reading it out loud. And we're good. Like, oh God, we've come of age. We got this book. Is it good enough? I don't know. Some of us were starting to go to college and we weren't sure about some of the syntax in here. And gee, was it meaty enough? Was it juicy enough? And ooh, this book doesn't have any thee and thy and John Barleycorn in it. Is it going to be good enough to get people clean? I don't know. And what you'll hear about writing is that good writing is rewriting. I can't take any kind of credit for this book. I was shown some proof. I did some proofing and gave some opinions of things. But that's the extent of my contribution. This book happened. And I know the tabs in it make me look really cool. I have tabs in it so I can find places. And so we've got these incredible resources here. And I've heard people say a couple of things about literature. I've heard many, many years ago, Doug Forsmith said, the way that you destroy an infiltrator program is infiltrate is through its literature. And I've also heard it said, I mean, just the ignorance of saying, don't write too much. Don't put your thoughts down too much. This becomes a money-making venture. I can't imagine how people who are knowledgeable and craving to learn and get better and recover fully could ever say that about writing. It's very immature, if you ask me. And so I've really enjoyed this book. And then the wonderful things that I've heard about this book, this Living Clean, when this first came out, people talk about quotes in this book and they get all dreamy-eyed. We get so excited that now we have life experience in here of many decades. And this book is a joy to study. And it doesn't come in Barbie pink, but this is the cover that I choose. And people that I sponsor get very exhausted with pushing this book. But I got to tell you, honestly, if you've got a length of time under your belt and you haven't worked through the step working guide, you must not want a revolution in your psyche, because that's what I found. I needed to move through my recovery. And if you feel stuck in your recovery and you've been waiting for a message, this is it right now. Work this book. And people say, oh, that workbook sucks. It's so redundant. I'm going to do it the basic way. Well, you're welcome to your basic recovery. I don't know about you. I want samurai recovery. I want to work through the stuff and I want to come out the other side and I want to be a victor. And my favorite part of the sixth edition of the basic text are the stories in the back. I absolutely adore these stories because they're global. And guess what? Whether we like it or not, whether it bothers us or not, Narcotics Anonymous has come of age, and it's a global program now, and it's inclusive. And I love reading the stories about all kinds of people from everywhere. I was sitting at the table at Moore Park, and it was the afternoon, and Greg Pierce and Jimmy Kennan were talking about altering the readings before the meeting a little bit to include different sexual preferences. And I don't remember much of the content of the discussion, but I remember thinking to myself, I wasn't sure why that needed to be in there. And I'm really proud to say that that reading was added and that we are now inclusive of even more types of human beings, and more people can be comfortable to get clean and be supported. I want to talk about the books and literature, and I also wanted to talk about, if you think that wars in NA between factions is something new, you really have not been around a very long time. So had a couple years under my belt. And Narcotics Anonymous was becoming very impassioned about its own literature. It actually began, some of the schism began. I remember attending Jimmy Kinnon's funeral and the sadness that waited around the ashram that day. And some of us shaking our heads, particularly I remember Doug, and I've had conversations with Fawn over the years talking about how deeply disappointed and broken Jimmy felt at the end of his life. Like he felt that somehow NA escaped from him or was grabbed or ripped off. And growing has been exceedingly painful, and it has not been done in a very elegant way. We used to share in meetings, those of us had a few years under our belt, and the word sober would come out of our mouths, as it often came out of Jimmy's mouth. If you venerate Jimmy Kinnon, you should know that he used his own language, which was our language. And you would share in a meeting from your heart, and people would hiss. It would actually hiss when you were talking. And any organization that doesn't venerate its elders is doomed to fail. Because if you insist on being uneducated by the history of the people who have made your organization, you are perpetuating ignorance and hatred. So some of us were kind of kicked out. We were not given full memberships. We called ourselves the silent minority. And we used whatever language we wanted to use. And consequently, meetings where we tolerated language were taken out of the schedule. That's a thing. And Jose Torres took me into World and showed me a list up on the wall of people who were blacklisted from ever speaking at a convention. And I was blacklisted from performing at a convention. And it was a really painful time to know that I had come to meetings and kept seats warm and kept doors open and filled the coffee pot, but I never got to be a full member because of that activity of mine. And, you know, I stayed clean longer, and I started really not only understanding but embracing and loving the concept of this being about an addiction and not being an ANDA program. And I learned, and I loved it. And it was good enough for me just to learn that lesson and have it. And, oh, well, okay, so I can't be part of this anymore fully, but this is still mine, and I can do my service my way. And then one day, I'm working on a weekend, and I'm out on this driveway constructing sets for a high school play, and I get this phone call. I think the year was 2000 and, oh gosh, I'm going to get this wrong. Jeff could help me, my husband. I think it was 2003 or 2 or something. It was NA's 50th anniversary, so it would have to be 2003. And I get this phone call from Bob S., and he says, we wanted to ask you to be the opening speaker at the 50th anniversary of World. And I lost my bearing and I fell off my feet on the asphalt, which hurts a lot. And I'm all scraped up rolling around on the sidewalk. And he says, you know, we have all learned very hard lessons about unity. And we apologize and we want to open the door to forgiveness. And it was a terrible time in my life in other ways, but to be able to walk into a world convention and to be the one who is asked, just like today, in this, why me? You know, seriously, there's a lot of people with a lot cooler service stories, trust me. It was very, very healing. So when there's schism now in the program and political issues, you know, I just want to say, keep coming back. You don't have to be afraid that somebody's going to remove your importance. You still matter, but you matter as part of a whole. You don't have to separate. You don't have to badmouth a group of people who are doing the very best they can to run this enormous thing. So many of us come here damaged with a sense that we've blown our lives. We've made a mistake and our opportunities have been swallowed, and the only place we have left to be important is in this organization. And gosh darn it, if we can't be the most important here and the most right, and if everybody doesn't follow what we say, you know, we're going to ferociously protect what we've decided is right. And that leaves no room for group conscience. And by the way, group conscience is not railroading somebody in a vote and hiding behind Robert's Rules of Order. Turns out group conscience takes a long time. So even though you're looking at your watch going, Aria should be over by now, group conscience is about communication and talk and respect and listening and compromise and following your spiritual guide. You know, and hopefully that's what we're moving towards. Wow, that was a whole lot of stuff that came out of me. I don't know how much more time I have. Yeah, I want to talk about the service that I do. So yeah, I've done service. You know, I did some region. I liked it a lot, but I had trouble driving that far. No, truth. My husband had trouble driving me that far. I mean, he did it, but man. And I've been a GSR many times over the last years. My clean date's August 25th, 76, so it's like 43 years and 7.5 months or something, and I've been a GSR a lot. I've been a coffee maker a lot. Mike S., my dearest Mike of Hollywood. Hi, Mike. Taught me that coffee pot is the biggest, coffee maker is the most important service position to have. And I love it. And I love doing what they do in Europe. I love bringing a newcomer a cup of coffee, that look of amazement in their eyes. Cause they're like, don't you know, I just snuck in here for the donut. And we're like, yeah, and have some coffee with it. You know, I like the service of, you know, if you have a step to drop with your sponsor and you think you're a pain in the butt, and oh my gosh, I gotta call them and make an appointment. They're so busy, and oh my gosh, I don't want to interrupt what they're doing. You know what a blessing you are when you drop a step? I get so stoked when one of my sponsees tells me, I need to make an appointment with you because I want to give you my step. I got to hear one just this morning, you know, really yesterday. I don't know. Oh, yeah, this morning. And what it means is that God's called me on the phone and said, okay, Karen, there's some stuff that you need to learn today. So you're going to listen to this step. And I'm going to speak to both of you. You're going to pray first and open your hearts, and both of you are going to learn something from this. And trust me, I care about learning a whole lot. I don't want to be the person in recovery who is sick, sick, sick. If I wanted to be that, I would still be using. I want to be the person in recovery who's able to look you straight in the eye and say, yeah, I went from a helpless, hopeless person who couldn't be awake and not be high and didn't want to be alive anymore to someone who is desperately protecting their life during a pandemic and on Zoom meetings all the time and working steps with people. And I have my little sponsorship meeting every single day at 5 p.m. on Zoom. And the reason is, two reasons. One, to make sure there's always a room open for the women I know and love. But the other reason is, I'm one of the women I know and love, and I want to make sure that I have a room every day with somebody. So my time's just about up. I have like 3 minutes left. And I just want to use this time to just really focus, and hopefully we can all do this together, if you don't mind. It may sound hokey to you. I came to this program an atheist, and I honor all belief systems. It's kind of crazy, but when I have a sponsee with a different religion than I have or different belief system, I always pray in their religion. I don't pray in mine, you know? And I would just like to take a moment. We're not affiliated with any thought. We can be atheists. We have no affiliation with any sect denomination. But I want to just right now honor what you believe. And I would like to just take a moment right now in your language, and in my language, in the language of the heart, just to ask that today, what's the date here? April, is it 17th, 2020? I'm not sure if that's the date today, but if that's the date today, that somebody in each and every region of the world that is listening to this right now makes a decision that they're going to accept this beautiful gift, and they're going to stay clean till the end of their days, whenever that is. So if we could just take a moment to just focus our energy, prayer, and intention to bring someone into the rooms. Thank you, newcomer. Welcome. We're your new family. Thanks for keeping us clean today. That's all I got.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Karen. Thank you so much. We love you. And that was amazing. Man, all right. Brad, I was going to introduce you. Go ahead and let them know where they can get.
Real quick, again, everybody, we're not connecting the Sun's tradition today, but we are encouraging you, if you do want to give, to come here to na.org, and it's the third box down, is contribute, and then you click on contribute. It opens up a new box, and you have a box right here. Please click button to continue, and you can give that way. And so if you're looking to give, we know a lot of you are. We ask you that you come here and do that. So that's all I got. Go ahead back, Jimmy.
All right. Thank you, Brian. All right. This next guy, man, we've been making a lot of meetings together lately through this platform, which is awesome. He's been coming to the Hollywood Noon meeting, and every time I see him in there, I just get excited, you know, because I got clean.